Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen, and we welcome you to
Love Letters Live.
This is a show about saying exactly what you mean in the clearest and dearest way possible. This is a place to learn to open your heart, to speak your mind, and to state your case. And this is, above all, a show about gratitude felt and gratitude expressed.
This is about no more blah, blah, blah. Just conversations that matter in life. We have a wonderful guest today, but before we get started, we wanted to tell you a little bit about our view of what a love letter is. A love letter can be to anyone at all. Certainly it can be to a sweetheart, but it's also for family members, for dear friends, teachers, your favorite butcher, baker, candlestick maker. It can be to people who are living, certainly, but also people who have gone on. And it even can be a letter to yourself.
The point is that they should be real letters on real paper, and pretty paper if you can, and stamped and mailed. Love letters are for people you want to invite into your life, and love letters can be for people you want to see gently out of your life. They're to encourage, to heal, to seduce, to woo, for promises meant to be kept, for hoping for the moon, for promising forever, anything at all.
They go actually way beyond romance. They are a joy to receive and even greater joy, in my opinion, to send. Because when I write a love letter, I just have the best time thinking about the things that I want to say to that person that I love so much and recalling all the great memories that we have. So it's really a joy to me to write love letters.
I think so, too. And I want to point out that even a good thank you note is a love letter of sorts. A love letter is really a custom-designed gift. It is a gift designed by you for one person and one person only, as a rule, on this planet. It's something unique. Nobody else is going to be able to replicate that gift. The person will never get two of them. That letter will never go out of style. It will be as good on the reread years later as it was the day it was sent. It's a gift that never gets returned. It's a gift that brings the best of your life with somebody into the light and lets the difficult fade. And by the way, sitting down to write a love letter, I just want to point out, I'm going to do this often, doesn't mean that you have only love in your heart. You can have a heart full of irritation, conflict, ambivalence. It doesn't matter. You can still write a good love letter, and sometimes they're even more beautiful for the conflict and ambivalence that you have, because it means you've taken the good and let the other stuff go.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of gifts, every week on this show we have a gift to give our listeners, which is a fabulous guest. We talk to people who have come through the challenges in life or just live long enough to have some love to express for the blessings, stories to share, and letters to write. Janet, who's our guest today?
We have a wonderful guest today, somebody I've known for many, many years. I suppose she's going to blow the whistle on that one when she talks. But she did want to be introduced as Gail Melman Blum to just recall the fact that we knew each other when we went by our maiden names. And Gail is a woman of enormous and beautiful style, a wicked sense of humor.
Oh, dear.
And she actually has spent her life living her beautiful style. She's easy with honesty, always has been. And somebody I love a lot. But anyway, the point is that Gail has made her life as her work has been actually in interior design, and she's exquisite at it. And I'm going to get right to Gail. So, Gail,
wow, thank you for that.
Well, it's I wish the show were an hour. I could do it.
You could.
We're going to talk about your love letter today. But first, I'm going to ask you the question that I always ask people, is challenges that you have faced in life, anything big that you have overcome. And I can't think of a person on this planet who hasn't. But what have yours been?
Well, first, I want to just say thank you, Janet, for inviting me today. And listening to your introduction really has inspired me to consider doing this when I get home, because you're absolutely right. I totally agree with you about the inspiration that it does inspire. I mean, it's terrific. Good job, you guys, for bringing it to us.
Thank you.
Challenges? Yes, we've all had the usual ones, the illnesses and parents' deaths and what have you. But when you posed this question to me, I thought back to a happy challenge. And that was 25 years ago, ripe old age of 40. I found myself sending my 18-year-old daughter off to college, happy at graduation, and what do you know? My husband and I found out that we were expecting a little baby.
Wow.
And so what were you thinking at
what
that
were
point?
We thinking? We just kept thinking, what did we do different? What did we do?
We know what you did.
Yeah, I know. What is going on? What should we do? Where do we go from here? And
Because you had choices. You were 40 years old.
Well,
and people were not
old.
Doing that then.
Exactly. It was way before I was.
I mean, we were laughing at you behind
yes,
your back.
Yes, I know you all were. And I was really, I couldn't tell my mother. I didn't know how I was going to tell my 18-year-old daughter. Of course, you know what the kids.
Very embarrassed.
You know what the kids think of their parents anyway. So the whole thing was quite a challenge. I have to tell you. And we went back and forth. And in those days, there were choices. And it was a difficult challenge, and it was a difficult choice. But believe me, when I think back, I want to spank myself to think that it could have ever gone any other way. We had a little boy, and turned out to be obviously the joy of our lives. And
after he was born, you said,
well, even in a couple of months into his birth, I wasn't quite sure we had done the right thing of sleepless nights. And somebody said, well, how are you doing? And I said, well, it's like owning a beautiful piece of jewelry. I love having it. I love wearing it. I love looking at it. But did I need it? I don't know if I really needed it. Of course, now I know that's not true. I did need it. And we came through soccer and baseball and Little League and the trials, and now he's 25, living in New York, and an absolute pleasure in our life.
So is he the one getting your love letter today?
Well, I wish he was, and I think maybe after today I will start one to him.
But today,
no. When we talked about this program and I thought about it, and the love letter that I'm going to share with you today is a eulogy. It was one for a very, very close and darling, dearest friend. I have my tissue out here.
Go ahead.
Who died. And she died of cervical cancer. And I know that cervical cancer is one that you're not supposed to die of today, so I'm just making a little plug out there to all the girls in our audience to please get yourself examined and checked. And it was the HPV virus that got her, that they, just the pap smear just wasn't good enough. No. Anyway, she was 52, married to one of my childhood friends, my childhood man friends. And she was just a dear. And
so this is not a love letter that you're going to write today, and we get to actually focus on something else different with this.
Possibly.
It's a letter it's something that's already been written.
Yes, it was.
And we're talking about it for a variety of reasons. But you had mentioned that your goal was to express the gratitude that you had at the way she let you into her illness and death. And that was somehow her love letter to all of her friends.
Well, when you said that, exactly, Janet, it was a love letter to us. And when I thought about it, I thought, well, she had an army of friends and a gang of about 10 of us. We called ourselves Dee Dee's Army, the Chemo Club. We just picked up and did all kinds of things for her. And you're right. She did allow us in. And instead of being very private with this thing, she embraced all of us, and we got to kind of run her illness. It was Dee Dee's army. She was the general. We were the army, and we did everything. We helped maintain her household. Her kids were in college. One daughter actually was in high school, and we made sure that Casey was taken care of, and driving, and cars, and the dog, and food in the house, and whatever it needed to be done. The cleaning lady on time, the gardener, driving to chemo, whatever needed to be done. She kind of let go, let it all over to us. Here's a woman that was in total control of everything. Controlled her friends, put us all together, controlled her kids, blah, blah, blah.
At a stage where she was dying a difficult death.
Totally. It was not easy. She did not have an easy time. It was painful and debilitating and undignified, as you can imagine. And here she was, this elegant little doll. And that was really a love letter to us. You're absolutely right. And in turn, we tried to write a love letter to her. by way of expressing it at her funeral.
So when you wrote the eulogy, you talked about the fact that everybody had sent cards. I mean, I just want to say this because this is such a beautiful lesson.
It is, and I recall that absolutely. When Dee Dee had an enormous circle of friends in her community, in all of the schools that she was in, and so she had all these splinter groups. And everybody, when they found out about her illness, wrote to her. And every time I was over there, Paul, her husband, would say, "Oh, Gail, wait till you read this letter that such and such wrote. And wait till you read this letter that such and such wrote. Oh, you can't believe such and such wrote a letter." And men were writing her, and, you know, husbands of friends. And they read them over and over and over, and they were beautiful. And I had bought a card for Dee Dee, and it was a very schmaltzy card, and I couldn't send it.
What did the card say?
It was something like, "Friends never let go." And it was, and I've got chills saying it again, and I regret that I didn't send it and didn't write her everything that I was thinking at the time.
Why didn't you send it?
I didn't do it because I felt that I was giving up, and I thought that she would think that I'm writing this because I may not have her anymore. And I didn't want her to think that we were giving up. I was, as you said, I was always the clown. I was the one that would come in and be the comic relief. And everybody, you know, some girls were, you know, very solicitous and hand-wringing, and not me. Mm-hmm. I'd come in and be jovial and pretend.
Mm-hmm.
Pretend is really what we did. And she had such a positive attitude. She loved her doctors. Her doctors told her she was going to be okay if she could just get beyond this hurdle. And
so your first reaction on hearing that she had cancer was?
Oh, it was devastating. And when we heard cervical, we kind of thought, oh, well, everybody gets over cervical cancer. This is one of the ones that you beat. And so we were optimistic for a while.
And you saw yourself in this how? That you...
Well, the first thing I thought, which was so selfish, was, oh, you guys, I don't want to do this. You guys, here we are. This is going to change all of our lives right now. We're going to be, you know, in this with her.
And of course, it's not really selfish. I mean, it's just a tribute of how much you didn't want to let her go.
Well, we didn't want to lose her, and we just felt that we all realized that we were facing a battle.
So, and you had said something earlier that what you learned from this. And you had mentioned to me earlier that when you heard over time that they didn't take any of these letters or cards as a goodbye and I'm giving up. They just saw them as love letters.
Oh, and I'm so upset with myself that I wasn't a part of one of those letters. And they have, I think the husband still reads them and he puts them in a basket.
Uh-huh.
And it just showed me what you were doing. And it's amazing.
And it just shows that you should be writing.
And you should. You should write it. It's so powerful. It is so powerful and beautiful, as you say over and over. It is. It's wonderful. And let me just add, I don't know if I told you this, but after the eulogy, which was hard... It wasn't that hard to deliver. I don't know what came over me, but it was something we all had written together, and we knew what we were going
to
say.
Because it's never hard to deliver a piece of
love.
Right,
exactly. And I was, you know, I talked to her sister and her husband and her children, blah, you know, all the usual things. But the nice thing that happened to me was I got love letters from people that were in attendance.
At the funeral.
At the funeral. Yeah. I was so blown away.
And you still have those?
Oh, and I have a letter from a lovely, and I still have them. I have them in a little file. And I have a letter, I got a letter, a love letter, which I'm now going to call them, from a nice man, a contemporary, who had just lost his wife. And he...
So the gift goes on.
Oh, my gosh.
One letter just starts a ball rolling, and you never know
where
it's going.
Beautiful. It really is. I'm so proud of you for bringing this to our attention.
Well,
I really am.
Just the experience of... So the eulogy was about big things and small things and the details that made up her life. I read it. It's gorgeous. And I just want to mention two things, if I may, from
sure,
it.
Sure. Oh, please.
One was, don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. And we are trying not to cry, and we do smile because Dee Dee was in our lives, our beautiful, adorable Dee Dee. We will forever miss her. We will forever miss hearing "Hi there" when we call and "Goodbye, sweetheart" when we hang up. Sadly, today we have to say to our sweet, beautiful Dee Dee, "Goodbye, sweetheart."
That was hard.
That's so lovely.
So
that was the tough one.
Thank you. And sending a eulogy as a love letter is a beautiful thing to do.
Just a reminder, you're listening to KUSF 90.3 FM, Love Letters Live. And Janet, what words of wisdom do you have for people who face the kind of situation that Gail did, where you need to write something but you're just hesitant to do that? How do you overcome that?
I think you just, whatever it is that you're thinking, I say just, you know, write with your mouth. Whatever it is that comes out, put it down on paper. Find yourself a good, quiet place to write. And if you are, as Gail said, the jovial person and the clown who keeps the mood up, write down those kind of memories. They're welcome. I have found that in writing myself to people who have lost someone, I talk about the funny things and the fun things, and it's well received. It is only uplifting.
I know you have a great story, Janet, about your friend who also was dying of cancer, and how you women wrote these letters. And
well, four of us went to visit a friend who was skeletal at this point. She had been propped up on the sofa, really a few days away from death, and we walked in, and as we walked in, one of the women looked at me and said, "I wrote something for her. Can I read it?" I wrote her a letter, and I said, "Yes." She started to read it. Not only did our friend not take it as any goodbye, she really took it as a hello. And Nancy read this, and she talked about times they were younger and the fun things they did and the life they shared. And contrary to being grim in any way at all, this woman, she started to smile and got animated. She had color in her cheeks, and she was laughing. And what it served was, it took her back to her strongest self. And when we left, she said, "Will you come back again soon?" And we told her we would. And she died 2 days later. Mm. We didn't get to. But we got to see her revived.
What a gift you gave her, though.
It's just magic.
It is.
Well, that's great. And to bring things back, I love the story of this baby boy that you got unexpectedly. And it reminds me of one of my favorite quotes. It's a John Lennon quote, and I'm probably going to murder it here a little bit. But it's something like, "Life is what happens when you're making other plans."
I love that, too.
Yes.
I like that. It's a good pillow for somebody to needlepoint.
Right. And, of course, that decision for Mike was, you know, he had never had children before,
right? So it was great, and it's when I just get such warm, tingly feelings back to those days.
And you mentioned that you email your son a lot.
Well, that's what I said to you when you said, "Are you going to write to Jeffrey?" And I said, "You know, I think I write to him all the time, and we've always expressed our true feelings with him. I think probably more than we did with daughter number one. It's just easier now with the communication as it is with instant message, and you know,
but that email is not a love letter.
It's not, and I must say I've been overusing the email, I think, a little too much, and I won't. My handwriting has gotten so terrible that
that's a really good point.
Can I write a nice love letter on the computer in a pretty script?
No.
Oh, please.
You know something? There is something about your own handwriting that is so delicious.
But you can't read some of it.
Well, write it if
better.
You can more slowly, because Teresa and I got a letter, Teresa, when we did a workshop, and it was an article. It is an article in Newsweek about an old man. I hope he's not listening, but he is an older man. whose wife died, and he says, "We had the love, but I long for the letters. I have nothing in her handwriting."
I have to tell you this one thing. Speaking of handwriting and how important it is. How about recipes? I have my mother's recipes.
Uh-huh.
And for Passover, one of the holidays, I was in a complete tiz that I couldn't find the Kugel recipe in her handwriting. And I called my sister, and I said, "Do you have Mommy's recipe for the Kugel, the Passover Kugel?" She said, "Yes." I said, "Well, don't lose it. I can't find mine, and I'm more upset about the fact that it was in." Just proven another point, Janet. I just kept...
Now, for people who have handwriting...
Now I need penmanship lessons.
We'll talk about... For people who have handwriting that's really psychopathic, and I mean extreme... Then you can pick a pretty font on the computer, but the envelope has got to be in your handwriting if you have to print it, and it takes you a week.
Oh, dear.
Something has to be in your handwriting.
You're right.
And let the person call and say, I can't read this.
What did you say?
And then you'll have another gift of a conversation.
That is absolutely
the handwriting is key. I mean, my father had terrible handwriting, and I have a few things in his writing, and I just treasure them.
Mm-hmm. My grandfather, I have a few things in a prayer book or something.
Okay.
I do.
Right, and I just found books with the handwriting of my great-grandparents. And actually great-great-grandparents, and you know, from the early 1800s, and it's so wonderful.
And by the way, that handwriting is really interesting historically also, because it changes from generation to generation.
Yeah, absolutely.
God help us what we have today, or
yeah,
will in another generation.
Right. My kids print.
Yeah. Oh, well, again, thank you, Gail.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Oh, we love having you. And feel free to chime in. We have a few minutes left. Part of every Love Letters Live show, we reserve for listener involvement, for questions from letters from listeners and the letters that they have sent to Janet for an answer, because Janet's our expert. And, Janet, I want to read one to you now and see what you have to say. Dear Janet, how long should a love letter be?
Oh, that's such a good point. Okay. I tend to go on forever. I do it verbally. I do it in letters. But a love letter does not really have to be long. You should feel free to make it long. And there's something beautiful in that. But you have to take into consideration the attention span and emotional capabilities of the person receiving it. And I talked to somebody recently who wanted to do a very short one, and she was kind of, you know, in a knot about it. And she said, my father is not good at emotional outpouring. And I thought, oh, well, there's a lesson. If somebody's not good at it, better you should send a nice half page with really exactly what you want to say so the person will read it and take it in, rather than a three-page or two-page rambling that he's going to look at and say, ay, 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 I can't do this, and not read it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a consideration to take into account what the other person's capable of absorbing.
Thanks, Janet. We love to hear from our listeners. Please, and this is where we bend the rules, please email us. We'll give you the address shortly, so please get your pen or pencil ready. Tell us about the love letters you have written or received. Ask questions of Janet, or if you'd like to respond to one of the guests that we've had on the show, please also do that through the email. And here's the address. It's loveletterslive, just like it sounds, no spaces or dashes, loveletterslive@sbcglobal.net. And we promise to get back to you, certainly an email, or perhaps we'll, if it seems to be of general interest, we'll read the letter on the air, and Janet will respond.
And we will forward your emails to our guests.
Sure. Okay. Anything else to add, Janet?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know how much time we have. There's always something to add. How are we doing in time?
Well, we'll just ask our listeners to listen in next time. Please tune in every Saturday afternoon at 2:30 on KUSF 90.3 FM. We encourage you to put your loving sentiments into words and send them while you still have the chance.
And we say that all the time, while you still have the chance.
And I agree.
And if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, just remember that writing a love letter is a special occasion. It will be one for you. It will be one for the person who receives it, and the ball may keep rolling.
And so, from us, from Teresa
and Janet,
we'll see you next week.
Until then, with love, we'll sign off.
Bye-bye.